Okay, beginning a newest topic of Ribbis, tells the dinim of Ribbis as relate to non-Jews. It seems to be very little to discuss. The Pasuk Chumash. Chumash says it's okay. Menachi Sashich. Torah says you're permitted to charge Ribbis to a guy, you're permitted to receive Ribbis from a guy. Chor doesn't seem to be anything to discuss. There is an interesting Yeshayah, Taisin Babitzir has 2 days about whether Goyim are prohibited to take Ribbis from one another. So from Jews to Goyim and Goyim to Jews, that's a Pasuk Chumash. But from Goyim to Goyim is unclear. So Taisus quotes one day that maybe a Goy is not allowed to take ribbis from another Goy. That was always the Pesach in the Middle Ages. That's what the Goyim held in the Middle Ages. That's how the Muslims hold today also, that the Goyim aren't allowed to take ribbis from one another. That's why they always need the Jews to be the brokers, to do the Hetayim for them. So it's one day in Taisus. Why would anybody say such a wild thing that there's an Isser of ribbis from one Goy to another? It's not from the Shev Mitzvah B'nai Noach. So it seems to be that Taisus is raising really a very lumdish shaila about the nature of ribbis. Is ribbis really a subcategory of gezeila? Not. Is ribbis even related to the issur of gezeila? At first glance, there's no connection at all between ribbis and gezeila. That gezeila, if I take something against your will, ribbis, you give me in your own ratzon. You decide to sign a contract of ribbis with me. So one of the rules have to be gezeila. So we'll talk about this a little bit later on when we speak about returning ribbis. There's a whole sug in the Gemara Mitzvah about Hachzaras ribbis. Is that related to the mitzvah of Heshev, it's like Zeila or not? There are differences between the two. So the Pashup Shad is that Ribbis is not a din of Gezeila. There's one Gemara Bava Metzia that sounds a little bit that Ribbis is like a quasi-Gezeila-oriented halacha. So if that's the case, that Ribbis smacks a little bit of Gezeila, then I can understand that sheet that it says there's an issur of Ribbis from one guy to another. It's like part of the Shemitz is Menoch of Gezeila. But we usually don't assume that way. It's usually assumed that there's no Ribbis between Goyim. Not Tzkhaps and Afkamina for us. Let's say if two Goyim are having a business deal, and they ask me to be the lawyer, they ask me to broker the ribbis between the two of them, so we assume that that's not a problem. If there would really be an issa goma for a goy to take ribbis from another goy, that would be my problem with neivra. If neivra applies even to goyim, I'm not allowed to be machshel a goy in something that he's not allowed to do. So the example the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah Daf Vav, I'm not permitted to give eva menachai to a goy. There's an issa of lifneivra on something that's also for him to do. If we would have been chayshish for that day in Taisus, that goyim are not allowed to take ribbis with one another, that would be a potential problem for the Jewish person who's helping out. So I think the minhag elam is to be pretty makel. We don't insist that the goyim get a heter risk from one another. We assume that if it's two goyim, so that's also it's considered to be mutter. But between the Jews and goyim is ichamut. It's not a shaila. It's a very shapasti in chumash. Not only is it mutter for a person to take ribbis from a goy, the Rambam actually quotes this as one of the tag mitzvahs. Rambam counts this as a mitzvah sase, l'anochi sashich. There's a mitzvah to be, you know, like l'anochi tigos. There's a mitzvah to demand the chol back at the Shemitah. There's a mitzvah to be malva money beribis to goyim. So most of the Rishonim assume that this is not true. The Ravid and the Ramban of Torah, the Ramban say for mitzvahs, right? That's not a mitzvah. The Gemara uses a lashon of asay, because the Torah uses a lashon of l'anochi sashich. It doesn't mean it's a mitzvah asay. What it means is, it's a sense like a lav abo mechlal asay, namely, if I go ahead and I lend money beribis to a fellow Jew, then not only am I in violation of the lavim of lending money beribis, as there are many, many issurim involved, as we spoke about in the past, but I'm considered to be over the issur of lanochri sashich. If lanochri sashich v'lo liyisrael sashich, the implication of the pasuk is not to tell me I'm supposed to run around every morning looking around for a goy to lend money beribis to. It's not one of the tag mitzvahs. There's an issur for me to lend money to a Jew beribis. Besides the law of them in violation of, I'm also considered to be in violation of the Isser HaSeil and Achis HaShem. That's what the Ravid and the Ramban write. But the Rambam doesn't say that way. The Rambam counts it literally as one of the Taig Mitzvahs. Very strange issue to say Rambam. So it sounds like this Mamash Mitzvah, same way we run around trying to do Shuluch HaKen and Rish Segez, and we should run around giving money for Rivis, lending money for Rivis. Sounds a little bit strange, but that's what the Rambam does say. They say for Achinuch, comments on this sheet, following in the footsteps of this Rambam, that there may be a mitzvah to lend money beribis to a goy. What kind of a mitzvah is that? It's a mitzvah, according to the Rambam, it's like putting on tefillin. I'm supposed to go run ahead and look around for goyim to lend money beribis. It's a very bizarre type of a mitzvah. It says the Sefer Chinuch Mistam, what the nature of the mitzvah is that if I lend money to the goy shelo beribis, that's like a matnas chinam, that's like a matona. Because if you think about it, logically, it doesn't make any sense for me to lend money to people shelo beribis. The starting point of any loan should be, of course it should be ribbis. Why? What does a loan mean? I'm giving you $100 and you're going to go use that money to invest in something. So, but I'm losing out that possibility. So it should really be mutter, logically it should be mutter for me to charge anybody ribbis. It's like a schirus. If I own a car and I want to rent you out the car, so I'm giving you the car for a week, I can't use the car for that week, so I'm charging you a little bit of money that to make up that loss that I'm not able to use the car. So the same svar should apply to ribbis as well. I'm lending you my cash. I can't use the cash right now. I can't invest. I can't make $1 million of this cash. I can't buy a lotto ticket right now. So I'm losing potentially something. I'm going to charge you, 10% for that loss that that you're using the money for this, the interim period. So ribbis really should have been mutter. It's a chiddush haTorah. The Torah says you're not allowed to take ribbis. It's a tremendous chiddush haTorah. So the Torah was only mechadish, it's just a ribbis between two Jews. When it comes to a guy, for me to lend you money, shaloba ribbis, is a tremendous matnas chinam. It's an unbelievable matana. That's exactly what the Torah says we're supposed to do. The Torah wants us to be gomli chasadim to our fellow Jews. We're supposed to give them matanas. We're supposed to go out of our way to help somebody invest in a business. When it comes to a guy, there's no mitzvah to give a guy a matana. There's no mitzvah to give a guy a matana. Not supposed to. There's an isra of lo sechanim. There's an isra of matnas chinam. So it comes to Sefer Chinuch and says the nature of the mitzvah of lending money by ribbis to a guy, according to the Rambam, is not that there's tying mitzvahs to put on tefillin to lend money by ribbis. It means if you're already lending money to a guy, don't give it to him b'taras matana, give it to him b'taras halva. Why should you be extra nice? You should be the same as anyone else. It's the same way the guy make business investments to lend money by ribbis, so you should also lend money by ribbis to the guy. That's what the Sefer Chinuch says. If that's the case, that the nature of this quasi mitzvah according to the Rambam is smacks of Los Echonim, then it's going to be subject to the parameters of Los Echonim as well. So the use of Los Echonim, not to give Manas Chinam to a guy, so the Gemara says, Befeirish, Kamedik and Apostle and Chumash, that doesn't apply to a person who's a Ger Taisha. That only applies to an Ovid of Enizara. The Apostle and Chumash, the Apostle says, Lo Sochlu Chomaveila, La Gerisha, Bisharecha, Tetnera, Bachala, Mochel, and Nochri. The Torah says in Pashas Rei, if you have an animal that died, so now it's an Avela, died without Shechita. So what are you going to do with this? You can't eat it. So you have two options. Either you give it to a goy, or to a goy there means like, yeah, either you can feed it to animals, that's one option, or you're going to give it to a goy. So what kind of a goy are you going to give it to? So the Torah breaks it down to two options, two possibilities. Either you're going to give it to like ger or shebisharecha. It's not a ger. Tzedek doesn't mean a person who converted. He's Jewish, so obviously he's not eating the nevela. Like ger or shebisharecha there means a ger toishav. Oh, mochel and nochri. A nochri means a stranger. He's not part of your community. He's not living in Eretz Yisrael. He just happens to be here. That's a mochel and nochri. So who are these two different people? The get toishav and the nochri. So one is the ovid of Eretz Zara. Nochri is the ovid of Eretz Zara. The get toishav is someone who's living in Eretz Yisrael. If he's living in Eretz Yisrael, by definition, he's not an ovid of Eretz Zara. Because the Torah says in the Parshat Mishpatim, lo yeshu bi'aretz kepen yechtiros chali. You're not allowed to have ovid of Eretz Zara living in Eretz Yisrael. It's man that yodeinu tekefa. So comes the Chumash and draws a distinction between these two different types of goyim. Neither of them have kedushas Yisrael, but they're very, very different. One is a ger toishav, one is a nochri. So the Torah says, like ger shem shachtit in erev achol, you give it to him as a matana. O mochel and nochri, you sell it to the avid of Adizah, you sell it to the nochri. So why does the Gemara in one place, why does the pasuk in one place say to give it as a gift, and another place say to sell it? So the Gemara imsachim adav chafal from a base. Imsachim next year. Sign up next year. Those who are going to be with us, hopefully we'll talk about this next year. One of the first sugyas in Pesachim, Chaf Aleph and Beis. The Pasuk draws a distinction between the Ger Toshav and the Nochri in the following sense, that the Ger Toshav, you're supposed to give it to him as a matana, because there's no issue of Lo Sechonim in the Ger Toshav, but a Nochri, the Avid of Edizara, a Mochle Nochri, so sell it to the guy, don't give it to him as a matana, because there's an issue of Lo Sechonim. So you see clear from the Gemara that there's no issue of Lo Sechonim in the Ger Toshav. Once a person is a Ger Toshav, the issue of Lo Sechonim doesn't apply to him. That was all part of the, who was with us on the Shemitah trip? Nobody? No Shemitah people around? Okay, that was three trips ago already. Keep track of the trips. So on the Shemitah trip, we spoke a lot about this, about the issue of selling land in Eretz Yisrael. The Goyim is also part of Lo Sechanim. So that also may only apply to an Ovid of Eretz Yisrael, not to a Ger Toshav. So says the Sefer Chinuch, if we're right that this issue that the Rambam is telling us of Lenochri Soshech, you're supposed to lend money to Goyim Beribis, it's not as a positive mitzvah, but rather, you shouldn't give the money to the goyim shelo beribis. This only applies to an ovid of Eretz Yisrael, doesn't apply to a ger toshav because it's part of the general category of lo sechonim. The question is, does that mean anything b'zman hazeh? So we don't have too many ger toshav b'zman hazeh because the Gemara says in Masech Zerichin that you only allowed to have a ger toshav b'zman shayovel noheg. We don't have yovel anymore because once the Aseres HaShvat went to Golos 2,700 years ago, so it's not called koyosh ba'aleha. Whenever it's not Kol Yoshev Aleh, so there's no Yovels. But we don't have Yovel, we don't have Ger Toshav B'zman Hazeh. So the Rambam writes that B'zman Hazeh, we only have two categories of people. Either people who have Kedushas Yisrael, or people who are technically of the Avodah Zarah. That middle category of Ger Toshav doesn't really apply. There's no place to the Rambam. The Ravid, Is that 100% true? The Ravid holds there is a certain degree of getoshim as manas. Again, we're not learning the sugya getoshim right now. But I'll call upon him for our purposes, this unique sheet, this Rambam, there's some kind of a mitzvah, quote unquote, to lend money to going the ribbis. First of all, you have to be shown hold it's not true. And even within the Rambam, it's not a mitzvah in a positive sense, it's more of a mitzvah not to give it b'toras manas chidim. But this is all on the level of the araisa. On the level of the araisa, it's hetta gomor, maybe a mitzvah, maybe not a mitzvah, but it's hetta gomor to give ribbis to goyim and to take ribbis from goyim. Comes the Gemara of Metzi and says that this is all true in the Torah, but mid the Rabban and the Chachamim instituted that we really shouldn't take money of ribbis from goyim. It's not a good idea for us to lend money for ribbis to goyim, and they made it Issa the Rabbanon against it. Why did they make this Issa the Rabbanon? A simple reading of the Gemara, at least one of the reasons the Gemara says is that Shalayim will be myself. And we don't want to get into a habit that the goyim are always coming to the Jews. Jews has this money lending business. So the guy we're always coming to the Jew. The guy's going to come have a cup of coffee. He's going to sit down. He's going to schmooze. We'll talk business a little bit. We'll talk a little baseball a little bit. We'll come to friendly. Shal yimu b'maisav. So the Gemara, it sounds like bishalachim. You want to keep a little bit of a you know, fence, a little bit of a safeguard. Therefore, the Chacham instituted that you shouldn't rely on this din min haTorah of lending money b'ribis to goyim. So as an issa d'rabbanan that they made, not lend money b'ribis to goyim. And the Gemara says that since the issa was only d'rabbanan, so they gave a few exceptions to this rule. A couple of kulas that they built into this rule. So the Gemara says one of the kulas was Mishum Kedei Chayav. The Mamash the Yisrael needs a parnasa. This is only parnasa. He doesn't have any other job. The only thing he knows how to do is lend money b'ribis. So the Chacham didn't want to make life impossible for the Jews. So they made Heichad Yevsher Yevsher. If it's possible for you to do your business elsewhere, you should do your business elsewhere. But if it's impossible, Mishum Kedei Chayav, so then they were Mekel. So Taisus comments in Bamatzia's long Taisus today's in Neshech. The Taisus writes that the Minhag HaOlam is to be very, very lenient about this. And the days that we showed him, many of the Jews were money lenders, including Rabbeinu Tam himself. Why were all the Jews money lenders? Because the Goyim wouldn't lend money ribbis from one another. They held like that day in Taisus. So in the Catholic Church, one Christian wasn't permitted to take ribbis from another Christian. So what did they do? So they came with a chop. That if John wanted to borrow money from Paul Baribis, so John would lend, Paul would lend the money to Yankel Shmerel, and then Yankel Shmerel would lend the money to the other guy. So you had a Jew who was the middleman. That was Rabbeinu Tam's job. Besides writing Taisus and waiting for Shabbos to end and moving the parshas and tefillin, all the other things Rabbeinu Tam did. So he was also a money lender. We know Beferish he was a money lender. We know the history books tell us that, but we know Beferish from Taisus. Taisus, the condition of Gimel, writes Beferish that he was a money lender. Taisus writes, Rabbeinu Tam, we spoke about this year, about the Sugya of Harsha, right? That Rabbeinu Tam writes that sometimes he had a situation where he had a guy who would, owe him money, people would owe him money, and he had to go collect the money, but he didn't want to go collect the money. Either he was too busy learning, he didn't want to go schlep the waste money to go collect, or he was afraid the guy was going to kill him, the ones with all the money. So he would send some guys to go collect money for him. But that's a problem. How can you go send somebody else to collect your money for you? He had to make a shtar hasha. He had to authorize the person, give him a power of attorney to go represent Rabbeinu Tam in court. The only way to do that is to make a kinyan chalipin. So Rabbeinu Tam raises the question, can you make a kinyan chalipin for a guy? It's such a concept of a kinyan chalip between the Jew and a guy. So Taisus in Kiddushin of Gimel shows you all the rise back and forth. So then in the end of the Taisus writes, there have been a time held that you're allowed to, and not only did he hold you allowed, he did it. Taisus says that he used to not do it himself. He would rely on Shittas Rabbeinu Tam in order to make a hasha. The Shach says maybe no father Rabbeinu Tam, but obviously Rabbeinu Tam helped the father of it. Okay, good. Anyway, so you had a lot of Jews who were busy in the Middle Ages being money lenders. It was a very, very dangerous profession in those days, because basically what it meant was if imagine the following scenario. I'm going to borrow 10,000 what's a good coin, villages? No. 10,000 euros? I don't know. What do they use? What do they use in France? Northern France? Francs? I don't know. What do they use? That was in Germany. But no. What are these in France today? Now it's euros. What used to be before the francs, right? Okay, good. So I'm going to borrow 10,000 the Jew's going to borrow 10,000 francs from one guy and lend it to another guy. Obviously, he's going to have to hike up the interest over here. He's going to have to make a significant amount of profit. Otherwise, why am I wasting my time? So obviously, I'm going to charge ribbis. And I have to charge a very, very high amount of ribbis because there's a tremendous risk. What's the tremendous risk? The other guy's not going to pay me back. So if the other guy doesn't pay me back, I'm still going to have to pay back the other guy. The first guy's going to kill me. Small technical problems. So I'm going to be involved in 100 of these schemes. and it's very possible I may only get paid back 50 of those, 50 of these deals. So I got to make up the difference. I'm going to charge these exorbitant prices of ribbis just to be able to break even at some point. So that was the Jews' dilemma, one of the many dilemmas the Jews had in the Middle Ages. Why did they have this dilemma? It was very simple. Because the Goyim said they're not allowed, Jews aren't allowed to own any real estate. So you don't own any real estate, so you can't have a farm. They told the Jews they're not allowed to, they're not allowed to be in any of the guilds. They have these trade unions. All the cobblers were in the guild, and all the tailors were in the guild, and all the yanims were in the guild. So the Jews weren't allowed to be part of any guilds. So what are they supposed to do all day? How are they going to make a parnasa? They can't own land. They can't go to work. They sit in kol all day. Who's going to support the kol? So the only job that was open for Jews was to be either businessmen, to be traders, or to be involved in these kinds of money lending propositions. So that's why. So then what happened? So you had a lot of Jews who got stuck under this, not exactly the nicest profession. And then Shakespeare went ahead and wrote a play about complaining about that the Jews were all money lenders. Okay, sure. Anyway, leave out those details for now. Okay, good. So getting back to the story. So, how do we get talking about this? Oh, yeah. So Tosfos writes that Bizman Hazeh, so the Rishonim were very, very make, and the Jews were allowed to lend money at Beribis to Goyim. What happened to the sister? So Tosfos writes, because it's part of the cool of the Gemara. The Gemara says, Rishum Kedechayev is Mutter. Chumash says, if you're really stuck with Parnasa, you can't make a Parnasa any other way. So Nevach, you're stuck, so you're permitted to be Mekel. So Tosfos writes, Bizman Hazeh, that's always Kedechayev. He said, we don't have any money at all. Probably Tosfos were mamish poor. They didn't have any money. They were having crusades. They were running them for their lives all the time. They were still writing Tosfos. So Taisus writes, Nebuch, what are you going to do? We have to rely on the kula of Kedei Chayev. But then Taisus throws in another kula, another suggestion. Taisus says that maybe this whole Yisrael Dirabanan doesn't apply Bizman Hazeh. Why? This Yisrael Dirabanan, what was the nature of this Yisrael Dirabanan? There's nothing intrinsically wrong with taking ribbons from Goyim. The reason why the Chacham made this, because the Gemara says, Shlo Yumon Mimaisa, that you shouldn't learn from the Goyim's ways. You shouldn't have too much business interaction with the Goyim. So Taisus says, this was in the old days. We live in a Jewish society. You could do business with Jews, and you decide I'm going to go lend money to ribbis to goyim. Why? Because that's the only business you can't do with Jews. You can do everything else with Jews except for ribbis transactions. So you're going to go and open up a new office called the ribbis transaction office. Who your customer is going to be? They're all going to be goyim. So here you have an option of doing business with Jews, and you go out of your way to go choose the one profession that's going to force you to schmooze and and hang out with you're gonna have to go to the parties with your goyish clients. That's not chashlo yibud b'maisa. That's the problem. But Taisa says that was true when Jews lived in Eretz Yisrael, when they lived in a Jewish society. Now we live in France. We live amongst goyim. We do have a business with goyim, even if we're not ribbis lenders. What are you gonna tell us? Don't go into ribbis because we don't want to have anything to do with goyim. So what should you go into? Go into the wine business, like the other Balei Taisus did. So you're going to sell wine to goyim also. Go into the animal business. You're going to sell animals to goyim also. Whatever you do, you're going to have to sell. There aren't enough Jews to support yourself. How many Jews do you think there were? Hakol Mikol Yad Rashi and a few Talmidim. How many? There weren't millions of Jews in France. They had to do. Of course, they were doing business with the goyim. So Taisus says, "Bizman Hazeh, that Palavok can be doing business with goyim. Why should you ask the ribbis more than anything else?" If you want to really follow this gezeira to its utmost conclusion, you can never do any business with goyim. That's ridiculous, Taisa says. That was a ingozing gezeira. Let's see more. Shenachol Lamud Bo, the Chum never made such a gezeira. They only singled out the profession of ribbis at a time when it was possible to avoid business interaction with goyim. Bizman Hazeh, it's not practical. So Taisa says the whole list was never instituted Bizman Hazeh. Well, the mice, the combination of reasons, Taisus writes that the minig ha'olam was always lahakil, and that's the minig ha'olam is that we assume that this issa de rabbanan of lending money to goyim beribis doesn't apply either because it's a situation where a person really needs the parnasa, or if he doesn't need the parnasa, he has this other swerve of Taisus. That's what some of the more contemporary posts can raise the question: is this kula really good? Is this kula really, really gevaldik for us? So the first kula mishum kedei chayev depends on the case. So in Nochanav, if a guy mamish is plotzing, he doesn't have a parnosa, his whole parnosa is to be involved in these kinds of nechmeis, a mortgage deal, I don't know, he's involved in things that are always involved in ribbis, he has no other training or other parnosa. Okay, mishum kedei chayev is mutter. The guy's got plenty of parnosa. He can close down his ribbis dealings, he'll still be fine. He's doing okay, he's got a lot of other things. He wants to make a few extra dollars. He happens to own a bank or something. He can do other things also. So the kula of Mishum Gedei Chayev apply Bizman Hazeh. It's a little bit shaky. What about the second kula? It depends where you are. It depends where you live. So if you live in America, you live in a society where you have to do business with going. You live in Barbach. I know you're only going to, but if you're going to do a regular normal business, even the people who live in Barbach come to 47th Street, they don't just deal with Jews. There's some going in 47th Street. A few. Not that many. Okay. Look, if you kitaka live in such a way, you only do business with Jews, okay. But if you have to interact with a goyish clients, so then the svara of Taisus Tahat applies to Manazeh. So some people admire that if you taka nochinav, you live in an insulated Jewish community and you don't have such tremendous parnasa problems, so none of the kulas really apply to you. So taka nochinav, you should really be bound by the Yisad Rabbanim of lending money by ribbis to goyim. Gotta get ahead the risk of when you lend money to goyim. I don't think most people think twice about it. Most people assume that when there's a Jew and a guy involved in the transaction, so it's just a freebie. That is, the Rabbanan has been out of style for the last 2,000 years or so. Most people haven't been following it. But Taisus wasn't so sure that it's true. So Taisus worked really hard to try to be Malamit Tzchus on the Minig in the Middle Ages to be Meiklan Rivers to Goyim. There was a major, major shaila that the Balei HaTosfos raised, which was very, very relevant in the Middle Ages. It's very relevant as well as also, who exactly is considered to be Jewish, who's considered to be not Jewish for these halachas? What do you mean, who's considered Jewish? If you have Kedushas Yisrael, you're Jewish. If you don't have Kedushas Yisrael, you're not Jewish. HaTosfos raised the question, what's the status of a mumar? What if you have someone who was born Jewish, or someone who converted, and at the time they converted were considered to be Jewish, and now they go off the derech legamet, they become a mumar le'avodah zarah. So what's the din? A person becomes a mumulach al shabbos for hesya mumulach al tarkula. What's the status of such a person vis-a-vis the halachas of ribbis? So we've spoke about this a little bit in the past, and we seem to get somewhat contradictory messages about what's the status of a mumar l'chol tarkula b'zman hazeh. What's the status of a mumulach al hazar, mumulach al shabbos for hesya? What exactly is the status of mumrim in general? Before we get to b'zman hazeh, just in general, what exactly is the status of mumrim? So on the one hand, the Gemara has a comment that Yisrael af b'shechot Yisrael hu. That a person, once he's born Jewish, so once he converts properly, no matter, there's nothing he can possibly do to remove Kedushas Yisrael. Yisrael af b'shechata Yisrael hu. On the other hand, we find that the Gemara, and in that light, the Gemara says that if Yisrael mumr is mekadosh anisha, so the Kedushin are atosa, the Kedushin are chal. On the other hand, we find Gemara at the beginning of Chulin, where the Gemara speaks about a person being a mumr to such an extent that he doesn't really have many of the dinim of Yisrael. Let's say, for example, if a mumul levadazar shechts an animal, then the shechit is no good. If a mumul levadazar touches wine, the wine becomes yayin esach. If a mumul levadazar wants to bring a carbon, we don't want to bring a carbon. Only Yisrael kasher is permitted to bring a carbon. The goy can bring a carbon. Yisrael kasher can bring a carbon. Yisrael mumul can't bring a carbon. So what exactly is the story of this mumul? The guy goes totally off the derech. Does he lose his kedushas Yisrael or not? So the Gemara in one place seems to say no, that the Kedushin Tovsin and Yisrael Apishachot Yisrael do, and another place the Gemara seems to say that he's not considered to be Jewish vis-a-vis Shechit, etc. So Taka, what is the halacha? So the Ruba, the Rishonim, we accept the halacha, the Maisa, hold that Avadi is considered to have Kedushas Yisrael. You can't lose Kedushas Yisrael. Once you're endowed with Kedushas Yisrael, either being born or being converted, you become Kaddish B'Kedushas Yisrael. There's nothing ever, ever, ever you can do to remove Kedushas Yisrael. And therefore, if he's Mekadosh Anisha, she's Mekudeshes. And therefore, let's say you have a woman who was born Jewish, she becomes an Avedis of a Zar, and then she has a child. The child's still Jewish. She says, Kedushas Yisrael, Kedushas Yisrael can never, ever be destroyed. Elohat, what the Gemara means, they have a certain halachas, he's treated as Dinu Ka'akam. He loses certain privileges of a Jew, a certain statuses, it's like a goy. Lagabi Hukashchit is considered to be a goy, based on perhaps Xeris Akosov, and Lagabi Hukastan Yainim is considered to be a goy. We treat him as Chumras, either Midaraisa, Midarabon, as the Shah of the Postman Hukashchita, where this halacha came from. But Lamaisa, in terms of his basic core Kedusha, so he still has Kedushas Yisrael. That's why the halacha says, that's what the Ramah writes in Hukas Geiris, that if you have a person who was born with Kedushas Yisrael, or converted and got Kedushas Yisrael, and now he goes off the derech, he becomes an Ovid of a Nazara, and now he wants to come back to the fold. So the Ramah writes, we have a minig that he should go to the mikvah, just as a sign that he's been chosen by tshuva. But it's not ma'akev, it's not a geirus, he doesn't need a geirus. He's considered, once he's Jewish, always Jewish. It's just a minig b'yam, it's a minig toiv, to just to demonstrate that he's coming, that he's been chosen by tshuva. I told the story over here, I'm sure I told it to the Meisim, with that shir I gave, no, Detroit, you might have told the story. I told him. I once gave a shiur in Detroit. I mentioned in passing this custom that the Ramah writes that a person who converts to another religion when he wants to be chazan b'tshuva, so he should go to the mikvah as a token sign of being chazan b'tshuva. So this older man came up to me after the shiur and says, "Rabbi, I want to speak to you for a couple of minutes." I just spoke. It was right before mincha. And then we daven mincha, and then we're supposed to go down for shalosh shuras. It was about 3 minutes before shkia, and this man wants to talk to me for a few minutes. do that much math to figure out, it's going to be a problem. So I said, okay, well, what would you like to talk to me about? So he said, I want to follow up what you mentioned this year about if a person becomes an idol worshiper, joins another religion, then he has to go to the mikveh afterwards. So he said, I want to tell you my life story. So, you know, that was the end of Shal Shudas. It was all started from Av Malcha. Omar Shom Yaakov, can sing a little nigger. So he started telling me a mice. He was born Jewish, but when he was a teenager, his parents converted him to Christianity, and he came along. He was baptized a mice. He was a guy for 50 years. Then he was Chozer B'tshuva. Now he's totally from. He told me he learns Daf Yomi. He comes to Minyan every day. It's a beautiful, wonderful Gemara. He looks at me and he says, is it really true that I'm supposed to go to the mikvah? So here I thought, like, you felt like I was saying he wasn't Jewish. So I said, no, you don't have to go to the mikveh. I said, it's a custom to go to the mikveh. I said, don't worry about it, it was 30 years ago. I said, don't worry, you didn't, don't worry about it. Said, I'm not active. So he said to me, no, I just wanted to find out because the rabbi told me 30 years ago I have to go to the mikveh. I wanted to make sure that rabbi knew what he was talking about. That would cause Mishal Shudas. All right, so back to the story. So we assume that the person is Jewish. Once Jewish, always Jewish. Nevertheless, Tosfos tells us in Avodah Zarah, raises the question, that maybe when it comes to Luchos Ribbis, we can be makel in the sense to treat the Yisrael Mumar, whoever is the Yisrael Mumar, as being not Jewish, vis-a-vis the Luchos of Ribbis in the following sense. Why should Ribbis be different than other areas of Halacha? He's Mekadosh and Isha, the condition is Chal, so Maishna Ribbis. So comes to us and says, well, if you look at the Pasuk in Chumash, the Pasuk says, why is there an Isra of Ribbis? Because I'm supposed to support my fellow Jew. I'm supposed to give him tzedakah, I'm supposed to give him a halvah b'chinam. I'm supposed to try to support him and help him whenever I can. That's why the Torah asks us Ribbis. So comes to us and says, I'm supposed to help and support. He's a member of another religion. He's a practicing Ovid Avodah Zarah. There's no mitzvah tzedakah. I'm not mechuyev to go support him. I'm mechuyev to give him a parnasa. So Taisa says the whole context of the psukim of Ribbis are indicating that whenever there's no mitzvah lachayoso, there's no mitzvah of Ribbis. So Taisa says that he's Jewish, but irrelevant. He's Jewish, but the mitzvah of Ribbis doesn't apply to him. So he's Jewish to Gabi Kedushin, he's Jewish to Gabi Geirus, and his child needs a Mila Bezmana. It's all true. He's Jewish. But Lagabi Yochas Ribbis, there's no mitzvah for me to give him, to lend money to Ribbis, because there's no mitzvah lachayos, there's no mitzvah lachayachichimach. That's Taisa's Chiddush in Maseches Avodah Zarah. However, Taisa says, it's true there's no issa for me to lend him money beribis, but there's an issa for him to lend money beribis to me. Because he's Jewish, so he still has to keep the mitzvahs. The fact that he belongs to another religion, that's not going to get him off the hook. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin that Yerovam ben Nevat is going to be judged, not only for all the Avodah Zarah that he did, but even for the fact that he didn't do Netil Sedayim, he didn't keep Erev Tavshil, the Gemara says. He's going to be held to task for every last issur in the Torah, Yisurim Derais, Yisurim Derabbanan. Just because you opt out of the religion doesn't mean that exempts you from onesh for not fulfilling the mitzvahs. So this person, he's a practicing Ovid Avodah Zarah, he's mechuyev to support me. He has to be mechayah me. I'm a nice guy, I didn't do anything wrong. I'm not mechuyev to mechayah him because he's no Avodah Zarah, but he's mechuyev to mechayah me. But the strange thing says, he says, I'm not allowed to borrow money for Ribbis from Yisrael Mumar, but I am permitted to lend money for Ribbis to Yisrael Mumar. That's Taisa's Chiddush. Again, he's considered to be Jewish, he has full-fledged Kiddush to Yisrael, but Ribbis is an exception to the rule, only going in one direction. So Lamaise, if Taisa's writes, I can't lend the money, I can't lend the money for Ribbis, but I'm not permitted to borrow money from Ribbis.
It's
a
danger that he's going to now borrow money from
Ribbis. Oh, that's right, so very good. So Taisa asks himself, wait a second, so if that's true, that he's still considered to be Jewish, and from his vantage point he's doing something wrong, so how can I ever lend him money for Ribbis? Aren't I in the process being machshel him in the isser of lending of borrowing money beribis? Remember, we started out the shiur last week by saying there's an isser to be malva money beribis, there's an isser to be lova money beribis. So when I lend money to John, he used to be Yaakov Shmero, now he became John. When I lend money to John beribis, so it's not my isser of being malva beribis because I'm not mechutu mechayim. Isn't he still bound by the isser deraisa lo soshech lechicha? He's not allowed to borrow money beribis. And if by doing so, I'm being machshel in the Lefneiva, there's Lefneiva and Yisrael Mumar also. So isn't that a problem? So Taisa says, that's not a problem. Why is it not a problem? Who remembers? We spoke about this. That the Isra and the Lova, is an expression of the Isra and the Malva. We raise this Chakira. What's the relationship between the Isra and the Malva and the Isra and the Lova? Are they two different Isurim? But the Isra and the Lova is because there's an Isra and the Malva. The main Isra of Ribbis is to lend money for Ribbis. As a secondary Siyag, as a Geder, the Torah says, even the Lova shouldn't get involved in the deal. But it's not an isser independently on the loiva. So we had a thesis about the sugi of katan. There's one day in the Gemara that says that a katan is allowed to lend money beribis. So thesis asked, we have the pasuk not that way, but Taisa says, how can it be such a day? How can a katan lend money beribis to a gadol? Isn't the gadol in violation of losashich, of being low with money beribis? Taisa said in one day, that's not considered to be losashich, because losashich is only levea from low sidin, low beneshech, and whenever there's no issur in the mouth, there's no issur in the loiva. So that's what Taisa says, lamaisa. Taisa took that one day by katan, which wasn't lamaisa, and Taisa says, lamaisa over here. Taisa says that it's mutter for me to lend money to a Yisrael mumar beribis, and I don't have to be concerned with his issur, but the other way around would be problematic. Then Taisus goes into a little bit of a tangent, about a historical tangent, about a particular transaction, Beribis, that was very questionable. Api Alocha, Taisus quotes you from a combination of the Psukim, the Amari Chazal, about Avadja. Who in the world was Avadja? He was two things. He was the Ger. He was a Ger, number one, what else was he? We know three things about him. What? He was a Navi. And he was the one, he was Achav's right-hand man. He was his chief of staff. He was the one who took care of all of Achav's stuff. And he was able to hide the Nevi'e Hashem, right? He's the one who hid the 50 Nevi'im in one cave, 50 in another cave, when Ezebel was killing all the Nevi'im. So he was the one who appears to Eliyahu HaNavi, a whole story in Sefer Melachim. So Chazal say that he was the same person, that Avadja, as appears in Sefer Melachim, was the same Avadja, the Navi. And that Avadja, the Gemara says, was a Ger. And the reason why he was Misnabe, he was the one who said his Nebuah. What's the end of his Nebuah? No? Famous Nebuah. No? Isn't that his Nebuah? No? The last Pasuk in Avadja. There are only 21 Pasuk in the whole Avadja. I think it's the last Pasuk. So he was the one who gave the Nebuah to Esav, that Esav is going to be punished. So the Gemara says that Yavo Avadja, who was raised by Goyim, and he found the right path for Kadosh Baruch Hu, so he should give Musa to Esav, who was raised by Tzadikim. He grew up, Esav grew up in the house of Yitzchak and Rivka, and went off to Derech. So Avadja Ger is the one who's going to give them Tochacha. Anyway, so the Pasuk says that the Pasuk says about Avad, he was Yorias Hashem. He had tremendous Yirah Shemayim. And the Pasuk, there's a Pasuk in by Elisha, right? So, no one knows what I'm talking about? Before the parsha of the Isha Shunamis, so there's a parsha in Sefer Melachim about how Isha Achas of Briha Nevi'im, one of the wives of one of the young Nevi'im, comes to Elisha and she says that we're in big trouble, we got a lot of financial problems because we owe a lot of money, and her husband died and we have no way to make a parnasa, and I have a little Yisayim in the house, what are we going to do? So that's when the Nase of the Shemin, the Pacha Shemin, no one knows what I'm talking about. Same idea. That's right. Same idea. Okay, good. There should be more matzliach halavai then. So the somebody just sent me an email the other day quoting Gemara in Sanhedrin. This is the Gemara in Chelek that says that Ein Ben David Ba Ad She Yichle Dagim in Hayam, and the Gemara quotes a pasuk that says that I will turn your waters into oil or something. Okay. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do about that. So, okay, so Baruch Hashem Mashiach will come after that happens. Will he come today? Halavai. I'm not sure that Gemara is a riot necessarily to any current events, but it's interesting piece of information. Okay. Anyway, yeah, getting back to this, back to the Rebbe story. So the Pasuk says that this woman, this Rebbetzin for the Bnei Nevi'im, she comes crying to Elisha and says, we don't have any money and the children are starving. And now the Melech, the Hanosha Balakachash Day Abundim, that the person that we owe money to, so they're coming to take my children to be slaves. So Gavalt, Elisha, and Navi gotta help us. And Abducha Haya Yoreh Hashem and Uruf, she says, my husband was a big Yirei Shemayim. So Chazal say that this was none other than the wife of Ovadia Hanavi. He was Achas ibn Hanavim, he was a Talmud of Elisha. So he was the Yoreh Hashem. So why did he owe so much money, Tani? Where did he accumulate all these debts? So the Gemara says that he borrowed, he had to support the Nevi'im. The Pasuk says in Sefer Melachim that he was supporting 100 Nevi'im in the cave. So he had to running 100 coil in the cave. He had to pay, so he had to get money from somewhere. So where did he get the money from? He had borrowed the money from Achab's son. Achab was married to Ezebel and they had a child. What was his name? It was Yehoram, right? Is that Yehoram? Maybe we should get some Bible credit for today's yeah. Just Pesukim, not even Marachal, Pesukim and Navi. So I think it was Yehoram, if I'm not mistaken. So he was the next king after Achav. So Avadja borrowed a lot of money from him, but Yehoram wasn't such a nice guy. He lent him money for Ribbis. And he accumulated this tremendous thing. He didn't pay back his credit card on time. He died. He got these tremendous, tremendous bills. And now they're going after his wife and his yisomim to collect the money. And she doesn't have any money. So that's the whole story. The whole nace of the shemen was to be able to pay off those debts that the father had accrued earlier in order to support the Nevi'im who were being killed by the mother of the Malveh, i.e. by Yizevel. So that's the background of the story. So Tosfos asked the Kashim, what right did Ovadia have to lend, to borrow money by Rivis from Yehoram, even though he was an Ovid of Adazara. His parents were Ovid of Adazara. He was an Ovid of Adazara. He was a Mumu, because he was a Mumu L'chotar, called Mumu of Adazara. But still, Taisa says, you're allowed to lend money to an Ovid of Adazara. You're not allowed to borrow money from an Ovid of Adazara. He still had conditions to Israel. So Taisa raises in between the lines a possibility. Who says he was Jewish? Yehoram. Who said he was Jewish? Who's his mother? His mother was Yizevel. Yizevel wasn't born Jewish. So Yizevel, Tosfos assumes that Yizevel converted. Tosfos assumes that her geirus was a good geirus, even though they weren't exactly the firmest people in the world. Acham was an Ovid of Adazara. So he assumes that somehow, Tosfos assumes that there was somehow some kind of a quasi kabbalas mitzvahs, like the wife, like Bas Paro, that kind of a Eish Shimshon, one of those very, very shaky types of geirusim, that maybe was good with the Evid. So Tosfos writes that Mistama Yizevel was Jewish. And if Yizevel had Kedushas Yisrael, then her son had Kedushas Yisrael also. And Tosfos is stuck in a pickle. Lu Yitzuya, that she wasn't Jewish, then the question wouldn't have been a question. So Tosfos writes, so what's the answer to the question? So Tosfos writes, well, it's a question. It's a pikuach nefesh. You have 100 Nevi'im starving to death in a cave. No one's supporting them. No one giving any food. So it's so good. It's an issa derisive ribbis. You'll have Michal Shabbos for pikuach nefesh also. So Tosfos writes, it was mamash to get a pikuach nefesh. That's why Ovadia felt it was mutter to do what he did. It was pikuach nefesh, but he still had to pay the bills back. And he wasn't able to pay the bills. They took his kids. They were going to take his kids away as a father. Anyway, very, very strange story with a lot of ramifications. But Lamaisa, Taisa, and Abba Nazar, at the end of the day, stick to their position that you are permitted to lend money for ribbis to a Yisrael Mumar. However, you're not permitted to borrow money for ribbis from Yisrael Mumar. Not all the Rishayim agree with Taisa. Rashi disagrees with Taisa. Rashi is quoted as saying, it's not true. Yisrael, Bishchad, Yisraelu, that ain't little Dashin and time of the crop. We're going to make up drushes for what the reason for ribbis is. The Torah says you're not allowed to give money for ribbis. You're not allowed to take money for ribbis from anyone who has Kedushas Yisrael. But he is of it. Not of it is our Yisrael, Bishchad, Yisraelu, and therefore, just as he's Makadosh and Isha, the Kedushas Yisrael, you're not allowed. All these sort of ribbis apply to him as well. So how do we pass in Laloch at Shulchan Aruch? So the Machlekes the Mechaber and the Ramah. So the Mechaber writes, and it's Mutter, Mechaber quotes Taisus, that it's Mutter to lend money by ribbis to Yisrael Mumar, but you're not permitted to borrow money by ribbis from Yisrael Mumar. And the Ramah writes that Nochel Yizor, you should really be careful not to be involved in any of these kinds of ribbis transactions, because not even sure the Taisus Shita is correct. Even Aniach, the Taisus writes, well, Zayin Taisus writes, most of the Rishonim probably held like Taisus, even Aniach, that it's true, Mikra, Shulchan Aruch, that you're allowed to lend money by ribbis to Yisrael Mumar. Who exactly is the Yisrael Mumar? So we know there are three people who qualify as a Mumar Chalatar Akula. Either a person is an Ovid of Adazara, or a person is Michal Shabbos for Hesia. Most of the Rishonim hold that the Klal for Hesia only refers to Michal Shabbos. An Ovid of Adazara becomes a Mumar even with Tapa for Hesia. The Gemara always speaks about Ovid of Adazara, Michal Shabbos for Hesia. So it's a question, technically, is the word for Hesia going back on the. Where's Aviluch Shen? Dangling into. Modifies like. Is for Hesia modifying only Michil Shabbos, or is for Hesia modifying even Ovid of Adazar? So there's one day in Rishonim that says, if you're a private Ovid of Adazar in your own house, you worship idols, that's okay. You're not meant to do it. Don't quote me on that one. But you don't become a Mumar. You don't become a Mumar L'chol Torah Kula. And most of Rishonim say it's not true. That once you're an Ovid of Adazar, that by definition makes you into a Mumar L'chol Torah Kula. Only when it comes to Chil Shabbos, you need that dimension of for Hesia. What's the svar? Why should it be the Chil Shabbos needs that added dimension, the added condition of for Hesia? So the chur is based on this Rashi. Rashi writes in the beginning of Chulin, why is it that a Michal Shabbos becomes Dino Ka'akom? The Chil Shabbos is Nisa Skila. There are a lot of Isur Skila. Bol Nar Maros is also Nisa Skila. There are other Isur Skila that are also very, very serious Averis in the Torah, but they don't make you into a Mumma L'chol Torah Kula. So my high the Isur of Chil Shabbos. So Rashi writes, what makes you into a Mumul Chol Torah Kula is not so much the Chumras HaIsser, but it's the statement, it's the belief that goes with the Isser. What's prompting you to do the Averis? Rashi says what really makes a person into a Mumul Chol Torah Kula is when he's Kofar B'Hashem. That's the real definition of a Mumul Chol Torah. He doesn't believe in the Rabbani Shalom. He doesn't believe in the Rabbani Shalom. So then, How can you talk about Torah? Torah, the prerequisite of discussing Torah, Shemiras HaTorah Mitzvahs, only makes sense with the existence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Chas Shalom, a person doesn't believe in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so he may practice, quote-unquote, the mitzvahs. He can be an atheist and be a machter at all the mitzvahs, but it's meaningless. That's not mitzvahs. A mitzvah means Asher Kedishanu Mitzvah Yisrael Tzivanu. If a person doesn't believe in Asher Kedishanu Mitzvah Yisrael Tzivanu, what he's doing is just a game. That's not a mitzvah. That's not considered to be a ma'aseh mitzvah. Somebody was just telling me a story over the weekend about somebody who the doctors told him he's not allowed to fast in Yom Kippur, and he went ahead and he fasted anyway. Baruch Hashem, he survived, okay? But he violated what the mitzvah Torah is. The Torah says he's not allowed to fast. He went ahead and fasted. So apparently he came to tell the Rav after Yom Kippur, you see, I fasted in Yom Kippur when the doctors told me not to. So whoever the Rav in the shul was, said to the person, he said, you did not fast in Yom Kippur. You fasted on Wednesday. It wasn't fasting Yom Kippur. It was a mitzvah to fast on Yom Kippur. But the Torah says to fast Yom Kippur. A person doesn't eat on a Wednesday, which happens to be the Jewish calendar Yom Kippur. That's not called the mitzvah fasting Yom Kippur. So the person told over the story, and he said, that's the word in the Brisker Rav's Maisa. The Brisker Rav once refused to give somebody an aliyah on a Tainus Tzibor when the person was not supposed to be fasting. Doctor's orders not to fast. And the person went ahead and they fasted anyway, so the Brisker Rav wouldn't give them the aliyah. Normally we don't give an aliyah to someone who's not a mechuy b'dov in the Kriyas HaTorah of that day. The Brisker Rav said, you're not mechuyev to fast. It's not fasting. It's called not eating. You didn't eat breakfast there. You didn't eat lunch there. It's not a Tainus Tzibor. A Tainus Tzibor means because the halacha requires if you to do it, then it's called a chelo shem Tainus Tzibor. So that's the same thing also. A guy does mitzvahs, but he doesn't believe in Rabbi Shalom. So what's shayach hasheh ki v'shalom? The whole thing, right, doesn't make any sense. So when I was in elementary school, so we used to have these programs, something like Shabbaton stuff. They were making a list of like five things in Torah mitzvahs, and imagine if one of these things was missing, which would be the, if you had to remove one of these five things, so which would you remove and still have Torah mitzvahs? So there's always ridiculous games. One of them was Shabbos, one of them was Kashrus, one of them was I don't know, Yom Tov. Which one could you still conceive of being Jewish, still having an observant, still being Shabbat Torah mitzvahs without the following? So there was always one in the list was the Rabbi Shalom. Imagine! Why do they teach fifth grade? Anyway, it wasn't in school. They just have these weekend Shabbos afternoon, these games. Ridiculous. So, can you conceive of having a Jewish positive Jewish experience without a Kadosh Baruch Hu? That was always the answer. The answer always was that that's okay. You can't get rid of Shabbos and you can't get rid of Kashrus. Why? Because Shabbos is Jewish identity and Kashrus is Jewish this. And Jewish that. Cuckoo, off the wall. So that's what Rashi says in the beginning of Sechas Chulin. You don't need Rashi and Chulin for this. Rashi and Chulin says the reason why Chil Shabbos Pesach is so bad is not because it's in this Eskila. Bal Nayim Maras is also in this Eskila, but the guy is still not considered to be a Mumul Chol Torah Kula. Says Rashi because Avodah Zarah and Chil Shabbos are statements of Kfira. Avodah Zarah is an absolute kfira in HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. And Shabbos, Rashi writes, is made the Eidus Sheker al HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shalom Boras Ha'olam. It means you're in effect, it's tantamount to saying the Baruch Hu is not the Borei Ha'olam. So that's a statement of kfira. So Rashi highlights the fact that you're made, that you're testifying. Shabbos is supposed to be an Eidus. Shabbos is an Ois. It's supposed to be an Eidus that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did create the world. And when the guy gets up and is made faker, that's the act of kfira. Now you can begin to understand why Chilul Shabbos for Hesi is so much more chomer than Chilul Shabbos with Tzinah. It's not just a quantitative question. It's qualitatively different act of Chilul Shabbos. If I'm a Chilul Shabbos in the privacy of my own home, it's a terrible issue. It's an issa skila, terrible. But it's not an aid to sheker, because you have to be aid to made somebody else. I'm going to stand in my own, lock myself in my room and give aid to that Reuben killed Shimon. It doesn't mean anything. I have to be made to others. Chilul Shabbos for Hesi is an aid to slacher. It's an aid that the Rebbe Shlomo Chasam didn't create the world. So comes the halacha and says, when you make such an eidus, you make such a statement of kfira, public statement of kfira, that's what transforms you to become a mumul l'chol ha'Torah kula. That's why the Binyan Tzion has in one of his tshuvas, a famous tshuva. I just quoted this tshuva in Berlin. I gave it to the smich, to the kollel guys. I was speaking about, were you at the shiur? There's still about shechitas akum. One of the mashuvim I gave about shechitas akum. I just quoted this Binyan Tzion. So the Binyan Tzion writes a tshuva about the following phenomenon. What if you have a person who is Mechal Shas for Hesia? His business is open on Shabbos. He goes, everybody knows he goes to work on Shabbos. They'll say, I'm Ba'edah. But we know for a fact that he believes that the Rebbe Hashem created the world. How do we know? He makes Kiddush every Friday night. His wife pinches lech. They have a Suda Shabbos. Then he goes to work all day. Why is he going to work? Because he needs a parnasa. So says the Binyan Tzion. That's not a Mumu L'chal Tarkula. That's not a Mechal Shabbos for Hesia. He's technically Mechal Shabbos for Hesia, but the Binyan Tzion quotes that Rashi in the Yin of Chulun. He's not a man in a Sheker. Because 5 minutes, he just said 5 minutes ago, Kiddush. He made Kiddush. He said Ritzeh. He sang Zemiris. Then he went to work. So the Binyan Tzion says, that's not a Mechal Shabbos. It's a terrible Aveira. He's still Chayav Skila. He's Mechal Shabbos. It's not a Mechal Shabbos for Hesia. So this Tshuva of the Binyan Tzion was discussed. Different people have different things to say about it. This was a very common challenge in America. This was the early Hashkama Minyanim in America. Most people today think the Hashkama Minyanim are the firmer people in Shul. All the guys, all the Bnei Torah, who want to get up at the crack of dawn at 8 o'clock in the morning to daven instead of 9 o'clock. So those are the Hashkama Minyanim. So where the Hashkama Minyanim started? They started in America in the early 1900s. When Nebuch, there were Jews who used to go to work on Shabbos because they couldn't make the parnasa, so they went to work. But they wanted to daven, so they couldn't go to shul at 9 o'clock in the morning. They had to be at work at 9 o'clock in the morning. So they used to get up at 6:30 in the morning. They daven at 7. There was no drasha, and daven quickly, no mishaberachs. So by 8:45, they were out and on the train, and they would get to work, whatever it was. So that was the origin of the Hashkama Minyanim in America. So would you say about such a person, he's mechal shas v'hesya? Guy gets up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go daven shacharis, to daven shacharis and musaf before he goes to work. So you get to call mechal shas. He's mechal shabbos. We're not advocating. We're not commending him for what he's doing. But with the call of Chalshas Hesia, so the Binyan Tzion was very hesitant to do that based on that Rashi. So I'm getting back to the story. So you have a person who's a mumer to meet the category of Taisus, to be mutter to lend money beribis to him, according to Taisus, he has to be either a Chalshas Hesia or a mumer levadizara or be mamish a mumer chalatarku. He does every aveir under the sun, so then for sure he's considered to be a mumer chalatarku. So the question is, how does that play out with manazel? What exactly is the status of people today? So there's a big, big question based on the famous Rambam in Hilchos Mamrim. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Mamrim that if you have groups of people who mamish break off from Torah and they don't believe in the Torah Shabbat, don't believe in the Torah Shabbat, the Tzdukim and the Baisusim and other groups of more recent times, so he says that's outright kfir and the Mumim Lechol Torah Kula, there's no question about it, it's happy curse of the Rambam. But the Rambam says, that's the first generation. It says the bnei ha'koyfim, the bnei ha'misisim. It says those people are Nebuch. What do you want from them? The kid was raised on kfir. The kid was raised on not knowing anything about authentic Torah Judaism. What do you want from the kid? It's not his fault. So the Rambam invokes the halachic category called tirik shenishpa. Tirik shenishpa is a gemara in the seventh paragraph of Shabbos, which is talking about literally the kid got captive, taken captive by the goyim. That's a real tirik shenishpa. So the Rambam writes, this is a figurative, theoretical shenishpa, a kid who was raised in a non-from atmosphere. Then the Rambam writes, even though he may have seen from people, he knows there are from people around, he's heard of shuls and yeshivas, he knows these things exist, but it's so foreign, it's such a concept, it's so foreign to him, how can you hold him responsible for what he said? So the Rambam writes, therefore, we should be nice to him, and we should try to be makariv him, try to show him the truth of Torah. There's a very famous Rambam quoted, anyone who's in Kiruv knows this Rambam. So the Rambam, famous Rambam, Hilchos Mamrim. So the Shach and the Ramon, the Shach and Hilchos Ribbis discuss this Rambam also. So even if Tosfos is right, there's a het that lend money by Ribbis to a Mumah. Again, we're not even sure that the original het was right. Rashi debated that. But even Zalzayin, that it's mutter to lend money by Ribbis to a Mumah, how does that play up as Manazev? You have a guy who's not really a Mumah. He's a Mumah. He's a proxy Mumah, but his great grandfather was a Mumah also, so he doesn't really know any better. So it's very hard to say that such a person is a mumul chal tarkul. He's a tinnik shenish, but he's a shy gate. So that's why all the poskim write bizman hazeh, that we can't rely on this shetaisus anymore. We can't just give a blanket hat to you can lend money by ribbis to people who are not from it. There's no such hat to bizman hazeh. First of all, even Rashi and the Ramah weren't even sure the hat even existed, even for the real people who are not from, even the first generation. Many Rishonim questioned whether this hat exists. But even Zalzayin, that there is such a hat, that there was such a hat there, Bizman Hazeh, it's very, very hard to invoke such a hat. Therefore, we assume today, if the guy is Jewish, that's it. There's an Isser Gomer, the Shah of the Raisa. You can't lend money by ribbis to even to a non-from Jew. You can't lend money, you can't borrow money. There's no hetter whatsoever, Bizman Hazeh. Everyone is considered Bizman Hazeh to be like a Tinuk Shenishpa. The Chazanish writes in Yerideya that it's not always true. Sometimes you do have people with Bizman Hazeh who are real Mumrim. You have people who grew up from, they went off the Derech themselves, so they really would not be subject to this kula. It's hard to know. You have to, it's mamish case by case. Was the person really exposed properly? Was not exposed properly? Is the shaykh amazing? So says the Chazon Ish, you ain't l'dayin al nashin avros. You have to sit down, mamish, with each person before you decide a person's a mumulcha or tarkula. You have to be done, mamish, individually. You can't just give klal. There are no categories. You have to be done each person. So we have to assume l'chumra in this, that all people b'zman hazeh, all non-people b'zman hazeh, are considered to be tinek shenishbos. Therefore, we have to be makarev them and be nice to them and go and treat them with all full privilege rights and privileges of Kedushas Yisrael, including the one of the rights and privileges that they're not permitted to lend money to them for them beribis. Sometimes you have a situation where you have to really decide. It's hard to make a call. What exactly the status of the person is? I had the Shiloh. So in Berlin, it's been a Shiloh. But the following is, it didn't air chatzera. So you have an area where you have a common courtyard. So you have to make an Erev chatzeras, and you have to do a schiris rishus from the goyim. So the halacha is that only Jews who are shomer Torah mitzvahs are involved in the Erev. Jews who are not, so are not really part of the Erev. So there was a situation, this person asked me that he lived in a building, and he was the only shomer Torah mitzvahs in the building, but there was another Jew in the building who had no shaykhus, and no very nice fellow, he said, but he didn't know from anything, and then a bunch of guys lived in the building. So the din is, if you only have one Jew in the building, you don't need an Erev Chatzeres. You don't need an Erev Chatzeres if you have two Jews to start out. So the question is, was this person status like a Yisroel? Was he status like a guy? So if he's a Machal Shabbos for Hesse, he doesn't know anything. But on the other hand, he's a Tinek Shnishbos, third generation already atheist. He didn't know anything. So if the person is Dino Ki Yisroel, so it gets a little bit tricky, then you would have to make an Erev Chatzeres. The guy's not a Moed of the Erev, so you can make a Chatzeres for Shos. The guy's very complicated. We're not sure what he is exactly. Is he Yisrael? Is he Dinok Akam, Dinok Yisrael? Not clear. So I told them they should cover themselves on all bases. So we'll make a Schiris Hashus from the super on behalf of all the Goyim, and we'll include him in the Schiris Hashus also, just in case he's Dinok Akam. And if he's Dinok Yisrael, so we'll make an Erev Chatzeres also, and we'll include him in the Erev Chatzeres also. So whoever he is, the same shot we have also. We have, all of our Erevim have these kinds of people. Every community has these kinds of people. We're not sure where they're coming or going. Here was just, there was a face to this person. He knew exactly who it was. So we'll cover ourselves on all possible bases. Anyway, getting back to the story. So Lamaisa, we're not going to have any of these coolest bezbanas. We're going to treat all non-from people as regular Jews vis-a-vis the halachas of Isurim, of giving ribbis and taking ribbis. There is a discussion, Shulchan Aruch Nachos Ribbis, about a group of people who probably we're not going to have too much interaction with these days. Those are the Kusim. We know the Kusim were the group of people who were brought over in the end of Bais Rishon, who were unclear whether they converted, didn't convert, was it sincere, was it not sincere, Machlokes HaTanoim about them. Finally, the Gemara says that Nimnu V'Gom with the Dinu Ka'achum, that we treat in the olden days, a Kusi was able to shecht. In the days of the Mishnah, according to some Tanoim, a Kusi could be a Shaychet. If you watch him carefully, he's not messing up, he's kosher to be a Shaychet. And then in the days of the early Amorim, they instituted that the Kusim and Mamash Dinu Ka'achum, Lagamri, and we forget about them, we don't treat them as being Jewish. So the Shulchan Aruch writes that a Kusi is treated like an Akum in the sense of being a Yisrael Mumar, but what that means is that you're allowed to lend money beribis to a Kusi, in case you want to go to Shechem right now and lend some money to a couple hundred of Kusim still around, but you're not allowed to borrow money from them beribis because they still consider to have some degree of Kedushas Yisrael, at least the Chumrah, we still treat them as being Jewish, so it's no better, no worse than a Yisrael Mumar. So you're allowed to lend them money beribis, you're not allowed to borrow money beribis from them. So the Shach writes, he doesn't understand the Shulchan Aruch. He says, the Gemara says, Asom ke'akum gemurim, legamri, the mamish dino ke'akum, finished, that's it. They're not considered to be Jewish anymore. So if they're not considered to be Jewish anymore, bein l'kula, bein l'chumra. The Shach says it should be mutim even to borrow money from ribbis, mamish goy. So even though that's what the Gemara sounds like, Asom ke'akum l'chol davar, it's hard to understand how do you do that exactly. How did the Chacham decide that if l'mais the Jewish, if you hold the Kusim never converted and the whole Gerus was a sham, so then they were never Jewish to start with. But if you hold that Kusim and Keri Hemes, that they really were halachically Jewish. Now, what do you mean we decided they're like Goyim? Who are we to decide like Goyim? What do you mean we make them like Goyim? That's a big question. Where does that koach come from? The Chazal of a koach, does the Beis and a Gola of a Sanhedrin of a koach to take a group of Jews and say, listen, you guys are so off base, you're so off the wall that you're hereby written out of the Jewish people. We are mafkir your conditions, Israel. Who gave exactly that koach to do that? That's what some seem to say. Some seem to say that we have such a... that Chazal were able to do, that's what they did to the Kusim. And others say, it's not true. The Chazal can't do that. They never did that to anybody. They don't have the koach to do that. If you're Jewish, you're Jewish. Nobody can ever change the fact that the person is Jewish. So again, it's unclear in the post-Kim and Shulchan Aruch, not too relevant for us. Not going to have too many ribbis transactions with Kusim. But every once in a while, you get Shai from Makusa. We had a Shai here in Yeshiva from Makusa. Yeah? Did I tell the story? I don't know. We had a Shai from but it was a Kusi. A Kusi once called the office here years ago. He was a businessman from Shechem. So he was in America for a while, and he called the office. And NYU, he wants to know. It was around March time. He wants to know if we knew when the Kusi Passover is going to be. He wants to know. He's not going to make it back to the store for Passover, and he wants to know when he's not allowed to do malacha. He's going to shech his animal. I don't know what they shech, whatever they do. So he wanted to know when the Kusi Passover is going to be. So the person, the secretary, answered the phone. Said Passover. We'll check the calendar. The Passover holiday, vacation, is such and such. So the guy said, No. We don't keep the Jewish Passover. We keep the Kusi Passover. So the secretary said, so why don't you look up in the Kusi calendar? My name is Kusi. I don't know. There's got to be like some way there. So he explained that no, we don't have a calendar. We can't have a calendar because they still do Kiddush HaChadosh HaPiriyah. So they don't know when Rosh Chodesh is going to be. He keeps speaking the Yomik. I keep real speaking the Yomik here. So he wanted to know, do you have any information? This was 20, 30 years ago before emails. He wanted to know, do you have any information about when my brethren in Samaria, when did they declare it to be the new moon? He wanted to know. So nothing in Ladina for him. So they couldn't. The Ritz office couldn't help. I don't know. They couldn't clear. I'm in the Kusi division. I don't know. Strange house. You never know. Okay, on that note, we'll end, and hopefully next tomorrow we'll try to get a little bit.
Well, the recorders off, when the recorders are off.